Scott, what about you? Have you built any dams out of mud?
I haven't, but you know, I think that you could take all of the Transformers Rise of the Darkspark game discs and build a dam with those. And that would probably be a better use of those discs than putting those in your console.
All right, welcome to Rated NA, the podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. This is episode number 159, and I am not Ash or Scott, but I'm Matt.
I'm Scott.
I'm Ash. Woo!
Yay!
Hey!
This time.
Look at that.
Better. I'm getting better at that.
We're in the midst of the summer now. Ash is on his summer...
It's like a walkabout.
Yeah, so, walkabout.
But it's more sitting, so it's like a sitabout. So I go to various places and sit.
But for those that have been listening for a long time, they'll be happy to hear you're not podcasting from a McDonald's right now.
I'm not.
That's amazing.
That was actually right around this exact time last year.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
The internet up in the boonies has improved, apparently, because I'm able to actually hang out with you guys and I can hear you.
You don't have to sit in your car in the parking lot of McDonald's.
No.
Like a creepo.
And I don't have an underwear pop filter this year, which is what I had two years ago.
How is the weather in the old the boonies that you're in? Is it
Smokies?
Cool?
It's gorgeous here, man. It's probably about, I don't know, probably in the 80s during the afternoon, and then at night it gets down to the high 60s. And since we're in the middle of the Smokies, it's kind of always a little bit like gray and misty, which is nice, but it's cool. For those listening that don't know where I go during the summers, I visit family for a few weeks in the summers and kind of use this cabin that we have as a base of operations, and it's in the western portion of the Smoky Mountains, and it's really isolated in the middle of nowhere, so I kind of become a mountain hermit for a couple weeks, which is nice.
It's great, man.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It is fun.
Totes gel.
Totes jelly.
You guys are always welcome to come to the cabin. You get to hang out with a bunch of dogs, though.
You're only missing out on like 200% humidity here.
I do. That's one reason why I leave. I cannot stand Orlando in the summer. It's horrible.
We had a total argument at work where everybody was like complaining that it was hot. And I was like, it is not hot right now. I'm like, Florida is hot right. Because it's actually gorgeous up here. Like, I think it got into the 90s once last week. And otherwise, it's been like 70s and 80s and breezy and like just kind of really nice. And everybody's like, blah, blah, blah at work and said something about it. So I pulled up the weather card from like weather.com.
Yeah.
And it was like 96 degrees, feels like 99, 83% humidity. I was like that.
You don't
sucks.
Understand. Yeah.
Every day this week, I'd get into my car and the car would go like 105. It's great.
Yeah. Florida heat actually hurts right now. You stand outside and you're like, ow.
It's like hard to breathe.
Yeah. And then you run back inside.
Let's do the rundown.
This week, we're going to talk a little bit about Google I.O. The new Transformers movie came out this week, and you guys, or Ash, saw the movie. I played the game. I took one for the team. I threw myself on that grenade for you guys. And then you guys saw a film called They Came Together, which I think is it's Michael Ian Black, right?
Michael He's Showalter.
In it. He's Showalter.
In it. Ah. Ian Black is in it, but it's Showalter and David Wayne from The State.
Awesome. We'll talk a little bit about what's going on with Aereo, the July Games with Gold promotion, and then in our Nerquato, with World Cup Mania sweeping the globe, do you think esports will ever be as big and popular?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
I only picked that question because I was staring at Twitter, and I saw like there's a World Cup banner above my Twitter, and I was like, well, I could ask a question about this.
Yeah, it's inescapable at this point.
I had nothing this morning. I was like, oh, what's a good question? So...
Today's podcast is brought to you once again by Audible.com. Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. Audible has over 150,000 titles to choose from in every genre: thrillers, business, romance, comedy, sci-fi, and more. Audible titles play on the iPhone, Kindle, Android, and more than 500 other devices, of which there are many, to listen anytime, anywhere. So you can get a free audiobook and help out the podcast by going to www.audibletrial.com/ratedNA. And Ash, I hear you have a pick this week.
Yeah, actually, because the drive is a bit long, my wife and I have been listening to the Lunar Chronicles trilogy, which is by Marissa Meyer. And the third book is available on Audible now, and it's called Cress. And it's kind of, if you guys have probably heard me talk about this series before, but it's like a, it's a YA trilogy, but it's going to, they're going to have more books as well. So I guess it's a YA series, but it's all kind of sci-fi, steampunk, cyberpunk take on the classic fantasy characters. Yeah. So the character of Cinderella is actually like a cyborg princess with like a cool robot arm. And, you know, it, it's really, it's kind of reminiscent of Star Wars meets Firefly in a lot of ways. So there's a lot of like homage to those universes in this. So it's really, I would say it's reminiscent of the old like Disney princesses and characters by sort of tone only, meaning that really it, it is just its own amazing, cool, super fun universe, and it doesn't really rely all that much on those past characters and who they really were. So it's really awesome. It's a lot of fun. The books are really easy to digest. The reader for Cress, and it's the same reader for Scarlet and for Cinder.
She's really good.
Yeah, she does all the voices of all the characters and all the different accents, and it's a really fun series. It's really, really just super enjoyable on a long drive. So I definitely recommend the Lunar Chronicles trilogy by Marissa Meyer if you're into strong female protagonists and space punk kind of stuff.
You know, I think you guys have been talking about it so much that I'm ready to give it a try.
I would, man. I would definitely.
Which audiobook do I start with? Which is the first one?
You start with Cinder.
Cinder, yeah.
Yeah. Cinder. It goes Cinder, Scarlet, and then Cress, and then the one that's coming out, I want to say early next year, is called Winter. So
Winter. Yeah, they're definitely enjoyable. The first one's very easy, like kind of a quick read or listen, and then they get a little more in depth as the world grows, and it's good. You should definitely
absolutely
check it out.
Yeah, the first one starts very small. It's kind of an intimate story, and then as they add characters and kind of like Matt said, expand on the universe, it gets really cool. Like the universe is huge, and there's, you know, a space powers and spaceships and AI and all sorts of stuff that I know Scott would like. So,
all right, yeah, I'm down.
Yeah, keep going, Ash. What have you been up to?
Oh, what have I been up to? well, thank you. I leave tomorrow. Actually, when this comes out, I'll be in Seattle. So, I'm going to Seattle for a few days on vacation with my wife. So, I'm kind of prepping for that.
Toast jelly again.
Yeah, well, we've never been together, first of all, and we've never been in a non-convention capacity because I go for PAX and she goes for GGC, and we've never gone to just kind of experience the food and the sights and the sounds of Seattle, so we're gonna go do that. Pretty excited about that. And the thing that we've been kind of doing in preparation is we've been rewatching Twin Peaks. We've both watched it a bunch of different times, but a lot of people don't really realize that Twin Peaks was filmed right outside of Seattle. So what we're going to do when we're up there is actually go to a lot of the shooting locations, because we're going to have a car. So we're going to go actually check out North Bend and get a piece of that double R apple pie or cherry pie and hang out, which is, you know, we're kind of excited about that because we're cool, big Twin Peaks fans. Game wise, let's see. I played the Titanfall 4 update. They just put a big update to Titanfall this week, which has been really cool. They added emblems to your Titans, so you can, whatever achievements you have, you can add different logos and stuff to your Titans and kind of customize your Titan a bit, which is something I think all of us really kind of wanted from
the
very
cool
beginning.
You could, everyone can do the same thing, like if we wanted to show that we were on a team, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be cool too.
Absolutely. So they added that, and I played that for a while. They balanced a lot of the guns, which is cool. They balanced a lot of like the things that were kind of broken with some of the Titans. Like for instance, if you had the Ogre Titan with the mega punch, he could basically take out a Strider in like two hits. So they kind of fixed that and rebalanced that a little bit. And basically the game, they added actually new menu graphics and added some achievements, and everything just feels much more polished and much more clean. And everything just seems to run a lot better too.
Everyone's talking about this new game mode. What's that all about?
They added actually two. One's Pilot Hunter, where one person is essentially a marked target, and you have to find and hunt down that marked target while the other team defends that target. So it's sort of like capture the flag, except for the flag as a person. And you're not trying to capture the flag, you're trying to kill the flag. So it's more like, you guys remember Kill the Carrier from middle school? Did you ever play that?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's sort of like Kill the Carrier in Titanfall, but you're just kind of running around trying to stay alive, and the other person's hunting you, which is actually, it's really fun. I tried it the other day. And the other one they added is called Wingman, which is you start out in your Titan, and it's just you and one other person versus another duo. So it's 2-on-2 matches, which is pretty intense. I haven't tried that yet, but I've been reading a bit about it, and people say it's awesome. So they added all that stuff. So if you're still playing Titanfall, it's probably better than ever. I played for, 4 or 5 hours the other day. And yeah, I played for a while. I got on with my buddy Derek, and we shot some folks and ran around.
D the P.
Yeah, so that was fun. So that's about it. I've just been running around in the hills, went on a couple little nature-y hikes and built a dam out of mud, did some mountain stuff.
What? Okay.
It's a true story. I built my own beaver dam. You know, you run out of stuff to do up here, so you have to improvise and build dams out of mud. Scott, what about you? Have you built any dams out of mud?
I haven't, but you know, I think that you could take all of the Transformers Rise of the Darkspark game discs and build a dam with those, and that would probably be a better use of those discs than putting those in your console.
Oh, that good, huh?
Yeah, I'll talk about it later in the reviews, but you know, I've been really disappointed that Redbox hasn't picked up Xbox One and PS4 titles in any meaningful way. I think they're piloting this program in some boxes, but none of the ones around here. But I did see that the Transformers movie tie-in game was released to Redbox this week, so I spent a couple of days with that, and I will talk about that later. I'm still playing The Wonderful 101 on the Nintendo Wii U,
awesome.
Which has kind of become my go-to game, which I didn't expect. I thought that I would be playing a lot more Mario Kart, but I tend to play that more with my wife when she wants to play that. And then when I'm just solo, I play Wonderful 101, which is better. I mean, like, I liked it before, and I like it more now. The story is starting to develop a little bit more in the game. And once you, like a lot of these Platinum games, you start out with very limited functionality with your move kit.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you progress through the game, you can buy more moves and combos and unlock more abilities, and then those games ramp up very quickly in terms of how much fun they are. And that's kind of where I'm at with that game. I'm like right in the middle of it right now.
And that's cool.
Yeah, it's really great.
Did you hear about the Platinum doing Legend of Korra?
I read something about that online.
What they're doing a Legend of Korra third person action game.
Oh.
So that's pretty cool.
That could be pretty cool, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's Platinum, so at least we know it's not going to suck.
Yeah, it won't just be terrible. Like hackneyed version of
Avatar. Yeah,
that's really cool. Let's see, what else am I doing? I've been playing down my summer game pile, which ends up consisting of a lot of games between Steam and the free games that we've gotten on Xbox 360 with Games with Gold.
Mm-hmm.
So I decided to check out Lara Croft and the Guardian of Light, which, from what I've heard, is actually a really fun game. And turns out that it is. It's a like a isometric kind of twin stick ish adventure game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not like a Tomb Raider game. It's just super casual. There's a handful of levels. They're all kind of puzzle based. It's not straight up like twin stick Diablo style, because it's more kind of based on platforming and solving puzzles. And there is some combat, but that's not really, I feel like, the focus of the game. But it's really cool, and you can play it in co-op, too. And if you download it with Games with Gold, then you already have it. So
I think it's like 4-player co-op, too, right?
I think this one is 2-player co-op.
Oh, it's 2-player, but there's 4 characters, I think I remember reading.
Oh, okay. Well, the reason why I wanted to play it is because I saw they were making another one, and the general idea was that...
okay, so you're not playing the new one, you're playing the first one.
No, I'm playing the first one because
I
heard...
Yeah, I heard the first one's awesome.
Yeah, and like the... The general gist of the second one was that the developer basically said, hey, we're not going to change something that isn't broken. We're just going to make it better. And so, you know, based on that information, if everybody thought the first game was good, you know, I should go play it. So that's what I'm doing right now. And it is fun. It's really good. It's just like a couch co-op, super casual, get in there and kind of have fun. The two characters have different abilities. You play sort of with this, like God defender creature that is your teammate. So Lara Croft has guns and she can do platforming, and she has a like a grappling hook, and then the other character has like a big shield, and he's like a little slower, and he can throw spears that create platforms for Lara Croft to jump on, and then she can pull him across like big chasms by using her grappling hook. So there's kind of like a team dynamic there too.
It's cool.
Yeah, so it's a pretty good game. Matt, what's going on with you, man?
Well, I've been getting like use of my hand and finger back, so I've been gaming a little bit more.
Nice. That's good. Congratulations.
Yeah, right.
Achievement unlocked.
Sure. The doctor told me that I'm healing extremely quick, which is like further backing up our feeling that I have some sort of weird healing superpower.
Yeah.
Because I always get sick and then I'm like better in a day, and then like if I get cut and stuff, my injuries are usually gone within like a week. So I don't know why, but for some reason my body's
like awesome with that stuff.
Yeah.
So but I've been playing, and I'm falling out of love with Watch Dogs real quick. I think it's just because I'm trying to jam the story together. Like, I just want to get through the story, and there are parts that are just not good. Like, they're just like, they're kind of like hackneyed storylines mixed with just like not the greatest. They like force gameplay in certain spots. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they'll force you to be like stealth guy, and that's okay. But then like, it's like, so when you're doing the Ash, you'll remember when you do the mission where you have to tail the one gangster guy through the gangster area.
Oh, and he has the purple car, that guy?
Yeah, after he gets out of the car and he's like walking and you're walking behind him. Mm-hmm. There's like zero room to, so like you're supposed to be stealthing around. You're not allowed to get spotted. Sure, I get it. But usually you get like this buffer zone of being spotted where you can like take a guy out if he turns and sees you or something.
Mm-hmm.
Before he like alerts everybody, and like that's not, he just, you literally cannot be looked at, and like the moment you're looked at, the round's over and you restart. And it's just like brutal for brutal sake, and it's not like it's the greatest stealth mechanic in the world either. So it's kind of like, we talked about it, I forget with what other game, but it might have been this game with shooting and stuff, but whenever they force you into like certain areas of gameplay, it just becomes way less fun all of a sudden. And kind of the fun part of, you know, maybe you really like to hack people, or maybe you really like to do this or that, like immediately just is no longer the case. You know,
you're
what
saying
I mean?
They like take away the player's choice to determine how they approach the situation.
Yeah. You literally like, you have to tail this guy. You can't get spotted. And if you lose him for like 13 seconds, then you lose the round. Like, it's just, the whole thing is just like driven home a little too hard. And so I've been bound, like, I'll turn it on, I'll play it for like a little bit, and then I'll just kind of like and I'll quit. And I fired up Titanfall this morning, played the update. It was as good as I remembered it being. Played for a little bit. I honestly only played a few rounds, and then I played Wolfenstein for a little bit this morning too.
Cool.
Because I realized that I put that game down when Watch Dogs came out, and now I'm regretting it because I think I enjoy Wolfenstein more than Watch Dogs.
It is an overall better game. I mean, yeah. I played the living shit out of Watch Dogs just because once I beat the game, I kind of enjoyed running around the map and just being crazy. That I had more fun doing that just in basically sandbox mode than I did with the story, or the non-existent story.
It's just so weirdly,
it's really,
transparently
really
bad.
Awful. The story is so awful in that game. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah,
still
mad
about that.
Like, I think we could talk about like sandbox games in a longer format at another day, but I still play Hearthstone on my iPad. I think I'm like weirdly addicted. It's the only thing I play on my iPad. Once I beat Wolf Among Us, or the fourth chapter, I just went like back into my Hearthstone cave and kept playing. I've still spent $0 on it, amazingly.
Nice.
But
that's great.
But it's like, it's just fun, like 15 minutes of fun, I guess, most of the time. Every once in a while, you'll end up with guys who are like ridiculously slow at making moves, and you're just kind of like, please, I just want to play a quick round, you know? But it's still fun. It's just Magic. I realize that. It's just like a way for a 35-year-old dude to play Magic, essentially. So
yeah, it is.
I don't mind it, but it's still good.
It's sad that doing that is better than playing the digital version of Magic.
Of Magic, yeah. Which I've played like almost every version that came out on the Xbox I had, and I played, and they were always okay, but they were never great.
Yeah, I mean, like the one that's on the Xbox is sort of crippled in the sense that the deck building is limited, and they kind of give you something to play with. And then there's another version that you can, I don't know if it's still up and running anymore, but there's a like a PC client that allows you to play online, is basically like a digital Magic experience complete with like tournaments and like blind box and stuff. But that, you know, obviously adds up very quickly, And I think the packs are the same price as what you would normally pay for the physical packs.
And I think that's the thing. The brilliant thing about Hearthstone is that the arena, which is basically their blind box, is super fun, and you don't have to spend money. You earn, you know, in-game money.
Yeah.
But you don't have to spend real – you can, but you don't have to spend real people money on it. And that's, like, the most fun part. Like, usually I just play rounds to earn money so that I can go back into the arena and play for a while, because there's an element of challenge to it, and it's kind of fun being able to play the different decks without, you know, having to, like, sit there and, you know, like, buy
cards. It's like an endurance mode, right?
Yeah. It's an endurance mode where you just get random picks of cards and stuff. So it's good. I really enjoy it. Still been going through Arrow. I can't marathon it like I used to. It's really good. I really enjoy it. I just it's like hard. The episodes are so long. It's like hard to marathon through like four or five. It's a really that's your day. Like
yeah.
essentially,
no, yeah, it is. It's a lot.
Melissa started watching Supernatural, and she's really enjoying it. And I've been catching episodes of it with her.
Mm-hmm.
And it is kind of fun if you've never watched it. It's kind of somewhere between like X-Files and Buffy, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
It's got that kind of Joss Whedon hokiness to it with like quips and lines and stuff, but it's Monster of the Week like X-Files, and but they're all actually supernatural. It's not like explained away with science half the time. You know, the actors are pretty – they're like – hunky fuck dudes kind of thing, but they're funny, you know, for the most part. I think it's just a requirement because it was a CW show. I think it's just like absolutely required to have hunky dudes in lead roles, which is fine. And then last thing I was going to talk about is I had an adventure. So we canceled Time Warner Cable finally, which is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
It is the worst. For the final week that we had it, we could not get into our DVR on our box. It was still recording all the shows, but if you hit the DVR button, no menu would load.
It's an awesome feature.
So then we unplugged it, like reset the box, plugged it back in, and then the DVR button worked, but then it would reset itself every like 30 minutes. I was just like, I hate this thing. What am I paying for? This is terrible. You know, and then like the only way to get customer service from them is like to tweet terrible shit about them. Like if you call them, it'll take forever, days for somebody to come out. But the moment you're like, Time Warner Cable sucks on Twitter, they're like, ooh, how can they DM you? How can we help you? And I'm like, oh, Jesus. I don't I hate this. This is not the way this should be going. So
I've had to do that before too.
It's the worst.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of having to like protest a store to get them to like, you know, pay attention to you.
Yeah, stand outside of it with a sign.
Yeah. So dumb. But so we got DirecTV, it got installed, but they have this new technology called, like, you've seen commercials, it's like their wireless boxes. And it's kind of cool. It works over – they set up like a router, especially for DirecTV, and then it works over these little boxes that you connect to the TV that like basically you don't have to have like cable wires running throughout your house. And I was like, oh, I'll go ahead and get a third one for like the guest room that we have. So I bought a TV at Best Buy. I just went in and I almost got a Wii U too, Scott. It was like I was like so freaking close. I was like standing in front of it and I was like, I know they'll price match Target. I could just get this right now and have it. And I was like staring at it and I'm like, we've just spent so much money with like Comic-Con and other stuff going on that I'm like, I can't do it right now.
Tempting.
I gotta wait. Yeah. So I bought this 32-inch TV. First of all, when's the last time you guys bought a TV?
Like
you just got one, right, Ash? You got a
nice one. I just got one a little bit ago, like a month ago.
I bought one on like Amazon last time.
It was $180.
Yeah, it's crazy how cheap they are.
They're like disposable now.
It's kind of ridiculous. Like, yeah. We traveled up here with like a 32-inch because it's just like, well, if it breaks, it's like $200.
Yeah.
Like, whatever.
So I got it. Like, it's an LED, so it's super light, right? And it's $180. So I pick, and it's just like the off Best Buy brand one or whatever, because the Samsung one that was like spec'd exactly the same was like $60
more.
Oh,
like just like an Insignia brand or something?
Yeah, and I was like, whatever. I don't care about this TV. It's just going to sit in another room and I'll hook the Xbox, like the 360 up to it and play that in there.
For sure.
So I go out to get a cab because I'm in Manhattan trying to get back to Brooklyn, and no cabs. It was like the worst time to get a cab and just nobody would pick me up. So then I'm like, Jesus. So I take the subway home with this TV.
Oh, shit.
And I'm being protective of it. But then I started thinking about it, and I'm like, this TV is worth less than the headphones that people wear on the subway around their neck.
Yeah.
It's worth like a third of an iPhone. Like this thing, this big thing that should be worth a ton of money is worth completely worthless compared to every other piece of technology that people are like pulling out iPads and like a Kindle is worth as much as my TV is.
Yeah.
It's like the craziest thing in the world.
You're just another dude on the subway with a television.
So I hauled this 32-inch TV home on the subway, and then the installer came yesterday, and I forgot to tell him, like, hey, just ignore the Xbox and just hook up the cable box to any input on the TV. Like, mm-hmm. I don't really care. And I forgot to say that, and poor Melissa was here with him, and he was, like, determined all of a sudden to get it all hooked up. Oh, so Jesus. He completely, like, unplugged everything.
Oh, what?
I was like, Melissa's, like, IMing me. She's like, he's still trying to hook up. I'm like, just tell him to stop and just plug it into any input on the TV. I don't want him touching my Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, I told him, like, three times, and he kept, like, trying to get it all, and it was just black screen. He couldn't figure it out, and I'm like,
oh, my gosh.
I'm like, have him call me. And finally, he just gave up. And like hooked it up into the TV so the cable box would work. And I get home, and we were gonna watch They Came Together on the Chromecast. And I'm like trying to get it to work, and it wouldn't come up. So I like go in the back of the box to look. He like literally just unplugged everything.
Oh, come on!
He had like HDMI. Like he left the cable wires still there, but moved the cable box, and like everything was just like discombobulated. I wanted to be like, I get what he was trying to be nice. Like he was trying to be like, oh, I don't want to disrupt anything. Let me, you know, have this set up the same way. But like the Xbox makes it incredibly weird how you hook, especially with a receiver too, because you've got like the cable box.
Up, yeah.
Yeah, it goes to the Xbox, which goes to the receiver, which goes to the TV, and like all this stuff. And I just felt bad for the guy, but it was funny that he was like fighting with my TV for like an hour trying to get it to work in the living room. And I'm like, he could just hook up the other two and just leave. It doesn't matter. I'll fix it when I get home. Sure enough, I get home. It took like 10 minutes for me to put it all together. But
of course.
It was humorous, to say the least. So.
Oh, boy.
You know what else is humorous, guys?
What's right? that?
News. Google I.O. happened this week. That was a terrible
I.O. That's how they say it, right?
Yeah.
I.O.
No, we sent a couple people to I.O., female developers. That is important information because Google did this whole big keynote, and we're going to talk about some of the stuff they announced, but two things that struck me as really weird was they were really pushing how many females were at their conference.
Right.
Because it's a big push for Google right now to get girls involved in coding. They've like they have some really awesome programs for it, which I think is really cool. What I didn't like about I.O. is that it became a press point, and it was really, really weird. Like they were like, oh, we're up to 20%, you know, women participants at Google I.O. up from 8% last year. And I was like, well, that's a cool fact. The thing they're not saying is they discounted tickets for women to come. So if you were a woman developer and wanted to buy a ticket, I think it was like half
night at a
bar. It was like half price. Yeah. Which, I mean, honestly, totally fine. Like, I don't have a problem with them doing that. I have a problem with them doing that and then using it
then
like,
yeah,
like just do it. Like, who
cares?
Check
out what we did.
Look how awesome this is, huh?
And then they said something really weird. They said, and there's over 1,000 women developers in this room right now. And I was like, that's a weird fact to just spit. Like, what were you counting on the way in?
Yeah.
So come to find out, or I found out, they were pulling women out of line and putting them in the front to get them up in the press area.
Oh, really?
Boy. And like, again,
shady.
Here's the thing. Again, do that. That's a good thing to do. There's nothing wrong with when women are underrepresented, especially at tech conferences or in tech in general. There's nothing wrong with discounting tickets for them. There's nothing wrong with giving them, you know, better treatment at the con and saying like, oh, we'll move you up front. We'll let you see things. I don't really care. Like, that's not the problem. My problem is why then turn around and turn it into like a number you can spit out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's weird. It's weird to like fake it and then be like, look how cool this is. And it's like, well, it was cool until you talked about it. Then it felt not cool all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a point for you to promote. But anyways, I agree with Google and I agree with what they're doing. I don't agree with it being like a, hey, bleh. unless that in some way inspires more women to get involved. If they see that, oh, well, Google is making it easier. I don't know. It's a weird thing
tricky.
To me.
It's very tricky.
So basically the idea is that you don't need to call so much attention to it. You can just kind of do it, and that's maybe the right thing to do.
Yeah, maybe like maybe advertise it to women that's I don't know. It's a hard thing to it's a weird, it's a tricky area. It's just weird when it becomes a marketing point.
Like fishing for compliments or something.
Yeah, and maybe that's not what they were doing, but it kind of felt like that. And just like, to me, it's like discount tickets to women, promote the convention as one that's good for women and, you know, beneficial to them. That's all great. You know, help them out so that they get into the room that everybody wants to be in because they're underrepresented in general. Like, that's all, this is all wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
It's just weird when you turn around and then make it a marketing point. Like,
right.
It's weird to me. But anyways, they announced a bunch of stuff. We'll kind of skim through it pretty quickly. They are becoming the Microsoft and Sony of the tech world, where their two platforms are slowly looking very similar to each other. Not design-wise, but spec-wise, if you will. Mm-hmm. So they announced their new Android version L. They didn't announce what it'll be yet. Who knows? They're all candy names, so licorice. Lollipop.
Man, I hope it's Gobstopper.
Well, it's an L. It's got to be an L.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Lollipop.
Probably. The neat thing they announced was a new design, like UI for L, and it looks pretty cool. And there's a whole, they're really trying to unify apps underneath their look and feel. So they have this whole like guidelines for designers on how to make apps for Android. And there's a big push for like kind of the merging of web and native. So like a native app is like an app you install on your phone and use, and web is obviously a web app. And they're trying to kind of make those two things less apparent from each other. Which is interesting and pretty cool. Talked about a lot of other stuff like power management and, you know, things that are important for developers, but only important once they're out for people. They announced Android Wear SDK, or didn't announce it. They demonstrated it. They announced it last year. Android Wear is their new like developer kit for making wearables, which right now pretty much consists of three watches. They showed off the three watches. One of them, I think, looks really nice in like an actual watch, and the other two kind of look like square, tiny screens that you put on your wrist, I guess.
Yeah, I saw these. Some of them actually look pretty cool.
I mean, is this a big deal? Like, it seems like all these watches do is tell you when you have like an email or a text message. It's basically like your lock screen on your wrist.
I mean, for me, if it's a nice watch and it's not crazy expensive, I like the added. So like if it does thing A well first, which would be a watch.
Ah.
Then I am not against having the added benefit of being able to like switch music and, you know, see who texted me without having to pull my phone out of my pocket.
Okay.
That's like a nice added benefit to me. But if it's an ugly watch that barely works, like I don't really give a crap that you can tell me how many steps I walked today on my watch face versus my phone.
Gotcha.
Does that make sense?
Yes.
That totally makes sense.
Are you guys interested at all in a wearable, like an iPhone watch, since you guys have iPhones?
I kind of am. I mean, if it's cheap enough, I don't see why not. I haven't worn a watch in so many years. I think like since the mid-90s. So, mm-hmm. So well, I mean, I would like to wear one at work just because I'm always taking my phone off to my phone out to check the time, rather. So, yeah, I mean, I could see wearing one.
And that's what I was going to say. It feels like, for me, being able to, like, when I'm walking around the city and I'm listening to podcasts or music, like, that would be nice to be able to just, like, look at my watch and, like, change this track or you know, see who texted me. Like, that's kind of, like, a benefit when I'm walking around, so I don't have to pull my you know, huge phone out and jam it in front of my face.
Yeah.
And then I look at, like, you, Ash, and I think, well, it'd probably be interesting for you if, as a teacher, you don't have this thing that is like a distraction to pull out of your pocket to look at when you could just look at your watch, you know, for like the time, or if you get a text or something. You know, you're not supposed to be texting during work, but you know what I mean. Like,
but I do anyway. Whoa.
Right. But other than I agree with Scott. There is a limited benefit to it too. Part of it feels like it's just duplicating your screen. So they really need to do something interesting with it, right?
Yeah, I feel like there was a reason why I stopped wearing watches in the first place.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, it's just
they touted that it was like water resistant, and Ryan was our friend Ryan was like, "Oh boy, a watch that's water resistant. I haven't seen that since 1930."
That's so true. Do you know if you can, this is kind of a weird question, but can you talk into the watch and reply to a text by doing that?
Yeah, you could do
see, that. That's pretty cool. Even though that's you guys have seen my voice to our voice to text, it's a pretty amazing thing. But I do that sometimes when I should be not texting back at all. But I do that instead of texting back, like when I'm driving or something. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it touts a lot of voice control, mostly swipe gestures. Like you're not typing on your watch at all, you know. So
that's cool.
But anyways, the SDK is now available. They showed off three watches. Like I said, the most interesting one to me is the Motorola one, which isn't out yet. It's going to come out later this summer. The other two watches were, I think, priced at $200 a piece. So I would assume the Moto one will probably be around the same, if not even a little cheaper, because that's kind of what they do. But we'll see. The next thing they announced was Android Auto, which is their like seamless integration into your car. It sounds wonderful until you realize that your car requires a 10-inch touchscreen before this really does anything for you whatsoever. So,
oh boy,
I don't have that in my car, and I just bought one. I don't think you guys have it in your car.
I don't even have power locks. Yeah, in my car, so no.
I know that they're more prevalent than they used to be, like touchscreens in your car. But you know, I don't. It's interesting, I guess, if you really want all in on Android, then maybe it's a cool thing, but. I don't really know. Is it anything you guys care about?
I mean, really.
The features were neat. They were like, oh, look, you can listen to music on your phone, get in your car, and it'll immediately jump onto that screen. And I'm like, yeah, but I already have that because I have Bluetooth. So, like, I get in my car and the song just keeps playing in my car, you know?
Mm-hmm. I am happy with just having access to the audio portion.
Yeah.
And, you know, there is some science out there that talks about, like, it doesn't matter if it's hands-free because it's not your hands that is the problem. It's your attention.
Yeah.
So, like, whether it's a screen on your phone or a screen in the dashboard or you talking to something in the car, it's all distracted driving. So, I really don't know. I mean, obviously, like, maps are popular. There's a purpose for that. You want to have, like, a backup camera. That's going to be required by 2016, I think, in all cars. So
it will, really?
I think that's a thing now, is that you need to have a backup camera. I will look while we were talking.
Yeah, that's because my wife just got a new car, and she has one of those, and it's actually pretty cool.
Yeah,
new cars. She got the touchscreen, right? Didn't she get the full...
She does have a touchscreen, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, new cars are going to have required to have backup cameras by 2016.
I have backup sensors, but not a backup camera.
Yeah. So that's going to be a thing. So every car will have a screen, I guess, in some capacity, but.
And this is also the same company that is engineering the driverless car. So, you know, the fact that they want to jam their Android interface in there before anybody else isn't necessarily shocking.
Yeah. I mean, I just don't know how much really do you need to do on that screen other than like, have access to a map and maybe your music, right?
And I think that's what they, I mean, that is mostly what they showed off, which was, you know, you get in, there was something about like, you looked up instructions for how to get somewhere on your phone, and then like, you sit down in your car and your car immediately just pulls up maps and gives you that location. Like, you know, it's like Google stuff, which is it just guesses at what you want and it knows you so well that it usually guesses correctly, which I can say is true. And that's kind of what the whole idea of it was this unified Google experience where you're going to, you know, be in your house, get in your car. Doesn't matter where you are. This is all Android is everywhere kind of thing.
Matt, are you going to Target? Let me help you get there.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
The next thing they announced was Android TV. I thought they were going to announce a little box you could buy. They did not. They announced just the kind of developer kit for building it, and they announced that it was coming in all Samsung, LG, I think, and something else TVs.
I think this is a good thing.
So, yeah, so it's a, you know, yet again another unified Android experience. This will bring, you know, all the apps and movies and music and everything else that you'd want on your TV from Android there. This is becoming, you know, this is becoming the pick your poison and kind of stick with it world, where if you're an iPhone user, you probably won't get an Android TV. It won't give you a whole lot of usage, but if you're an Android user, maybe you will. This will also include games. They showed off a spec controller. It looked a lot like an Xbox One controller. And I read an article somewhere that pointed out, like, as opposed to Google TV, where Google was trying to like revolutionize how you watch TV, this is clearly them saying, like, okay, we get it. You already know how you watch TV, so how about we give you a regular remote, a regular game controller, and we just make that experience better, which is kind of what the Android TV was. So what interested you about Android TV, Scott?
Well, I think if it's a standardized platform, I mean, the problem with smart televisions in general is that those interfaces will never be updated at the speed at which a mobile phone operating system can be updated in terms of their apps and stuff like that. So if it's set up in such a way where, you know, the same Netflix app that is developed for Android is the same one that's going to be running on your television, there's probably a much better chance that those experiences will be the same across those platforms and they'll be updated at the same frequency, which I think is better in the end. And then when you go from television to television, the experience should be similar as well. So that seems like a good thing for consumers.
Yeah, I think so. And it seems like a pretty solid like OS. Google, the Fire TV that just came out on Amazon is built on top of Android. And I think it's getting enough usage now that Android TV will probably be pretty solid. They announced updates to the Chromecast, which is my favorite streaming device. The updates were pretty cool. You no longer have to be on the same Wi-Fi network. It's kind of pin-based, so, and this is opt-in. So you can set up your Chromecast to be available off-network so that if you're on a different Wi-Fi network or not on the Wi-Fi network, you can reach it from your phone, you know, just by entering a pin, essentially, and still controlling the device.
Oh, cool. It's kind of like Chrome Remote Desktop.
Yeah, sort of. They also announced a feature called Backdrop, which sounds super uninteresting, but I actually think is really cool, where basically it'll pull photos from your photo library. Because right now, if you have your Chromecast on and you're not using it, it just shows like a, you know, like a pretty landscape picture from Google. And now it'll start pulling photos from your own library that you, I don't know if you can mark which ones are okay or not.
Yeah,
I
no dick
so
pics.
In some way.
Wallpapers of dick pics.
I take a lot of those, so I really hope that
when
I
you have company over, it's just like a slideshow constantly playing.
And then you can also set it up to tell you like weather and news, which I think is pretty cool. I think it'd be even more awesome if it started to integrate with my Google Now and could tell me like traffic updates and when I'm getting ready to go to work, how long my commute's going to be, or if a train screwed up. Like, that stuff's useful to me, and it'd be nice if I turned on my TV and it just was like there.
Don't forget about your wedding anniversary.
Yeah, that kind of stuff. They announced Android apps coming to Chromebook, which means that Chromebook, which runs on Chrome OS, will start to get Android apps from Android available inside of them. Things I think they announced were Evernote and Flipboard, I believe, and some others. So that's pretty neat. I like the Chromebook a lot, and if you don't need a big, powerful laptop, I think a $150 Chromebook is awesome. That's a thing. They announced more stuff for Android for work, which is actually kind of good for us guys because we use it, you guys know it or not.
Okay.
Yeah. Nerd Appropriate runs on top of the Google Apps network. So they gave a premium offering of like $10 a month for unlimited Google Drive. You can store all your stuff in the cloud. They did upgrades for Docs and for the work stuff that'll allow you to edit native Office stuff. So you can import Word and do like, I think, in a better experience than you get now.
And then you can upconvert those files to Google Docs, right?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, that's the word that they use, which is awesome.
Yeah. Google Cloud got some improvements. Nobody's going to care about that on this podcast. Google Fit was announced, which is their health platform, much like Apple announced HealthKit. Google Fit is a little more drawn down and much more for developers. It doesn't have its own app and all that like HealthKit had for Apple. But same concept, allows you to track stuff and integrate with platforms better. So I think the one point that I read that was about this was that it makes a unified place for all wearables to like interact with. So if you have a Nike Fuel Band or what are the other ones, Fitbit, or you know, any one of those on top of Android, they all have like a unified way to work and then that way, if you use MyFitnessPal or something else, like all of that should tie in together much better, essentially. Like there's no more like having to work with different platforms individually. This just gives it like one place to do all the things, sort of.
All the things.
That was I.O. Did you guys have any thoughts on it or no?
I mean, unfortunately, I just got a Fire TV a little while ago.
Did you?
Wow.
I did.
That's
I got
surprising.
It
the, Why'd you I get got a Fire for, TV?
Well, I got it for the bedroom. And I know to watch my adult movies.
Yeah.
So I'm not really in the market for any new streaming tech, and sure. I am an iPhone guy, so I don't really pay attention too much to Google I/O, but all that stuff sounds really cool. I'm interested to see where all of it goes in the next like 3 or 4 years, because I think the landscape's changing very quickly.
And,
you know, but I mean, very quickly, just in one sentence, I do like the Fire TV. It's pretty cool. Works really well.
Yeah, it is.
And
it nice...
too has a photo library dick pic stream thing.
Yeah. Is that a separate stream? Is that one of the features? Like photo stream?
I don't think you can actually change the photos, but it has like built in like scenic landscapes where sometimes I'll just sit there and watch.
Oh, it's so serene.
Like a fire.
Yeah. Yeah, Christina will walk in and I'll just be staring at the TV. It'll be like a stream. I'll be like, oh, this is what beauty looks like.
That's the new watching the guide.
Yeah, right.
Just watching the backgrounds rotate.
Totally. So the next news that is not as good as I/O that announced nothing good, essentially. You guys, I don't know how familiar you guys would be with this company, but there's a company called Aereo that started in New York. And was branching out to big cities pretty quickly. I think they were in Boston and possibly in California. And basically the tech was they had a sort of antenna farm where they just had a ton of antennas in one place. And then you could use your iPad or, you know, your streaming device of choice, Apple TV kind of thing. I don't think it was on Apple TV, but, you know, that kind of thing to stream TV to broadcast TV to your TV. Now that sounds ridiculous because that's what an antenna does. But as Scott well knows, and I well know from living in Orlando, you don't always get all the channels on an antenna. NBC, for example, in Orlando is for some reason, or was for a very long time, it's terrible.
It still is. For reasons unknown, NBC in Orlando is the only channel, I think, in the spectrum that is still broadcasting on VHF. As opposed to UHF, which means it's almost impossible to get unless you point like a roof antenna directly at the tower,
right?
Which is like underpowered as it is.
So. Yeah. Every time somebody tries to install a roof antenna, they die. That's just, you know, if you ever open up the newspaper, you're like, yeah, poor dad. He was installing that roof antenna and a fucking snake bit him. So don't ever install a roof antenna.
But it just sucks because for $10, you can buy a cheap RCA rabbit ear system and get all the other channels except for NBC, which only comes in like 25% of the time.
Yeah.
Scott, don't get on the roof is what I'm telling you.
I'm not going to
get it. It's a recipe for death.
Yes.
So basically what Aereo did was they rebroadcast these to you in real time with commercials and everything. They didn't edit stuff out. And then they had this sort of DVR service where you could mark a program to watch later, and you could DVR watch it later. I think they implemented that at some point. Because companies like Fox and I think others hate any kind of progress that doesn't involve them making somehow even more money, they sued the living hell out of Aereo. Basically saying that they were infringing copyright law because they were not paying the broadcast fees like cable does to these companies. They were saying, well, you're broadcasting our broadcast channels, so you should be paying fees to us, which is they are very expensive. And Aereo was only charging $8 a month for their service.
Yeah.
So at that point, Aereo fought back and said, we're not a cable company. We're not eliminating your ads. You're still getting the same exact, you know, we don't overwrite your ads. We don't do anything. We just are rebroadcasting. It's the same essentially as somebody coming to our house and using our antenna. Like it's the same process. We're not doing anything magical.
Mm-hmm.
We just have a lot of antennas so that people can get good antenna service.
They buy one antenna per customer.
Is that what it was?
Yeah, that's what they were doing. That's how they were subverting the law by buying one antenna per subscriber. And then saying, well, like, this is that person's antenna, and we're just collecting the content for them and broadcasting it to them.
Well, because our Supreme Court doesn't understand what cable is, they found Aereo to be in violation of these copyright laws, and Aereo is essentially shutting down.
Ouch.
The CEO said, we don't have a plan B. Like, if we're forced to pay the transmission rights to cable company or to broadcast companies, like, there's no way we can make that an affordable thing for people. This is it. You know, mm-hmm. like we can't do this. And Supreme Court said, oh, well, you know, you're just like a cable company, and shut them down. And they were like, well, we're not a cable. Like, it's a different process. Jeez. So shut them down. And Aereo's gone. This is kind of bad because we need these sort of advancements in how things
work. At least people
work.
To challenge the
the system.
Challenge
absolutely.
The system, yeah.
Yeah, and it's disheartening that the Supreme Court would do this, because part of me feels like this is a bad omen for things like net neutrality, which are going to be going back to the Supreme Court soon enough. This to me speaks to a lack of understanding of how technology works by the most powerful court in the nation.
Oh, yeah.
And it's scary, I guess, at best. So yeah, I just thought I'd bring it up because I think that based on what we do, you know, for fun with the podcast and even based on things that we love, these kind of fights are really important, and net neutrality is coming up soon, and we're going to need to keep an eye on that one again, because the FCC and the Supreme Court are, I don't know. It worries me. The head of the FCC right now is an ex-lobbyer for the cable companies. So get ready for that one, guys.
My body is ready.
Oh, boy.
You guys want to end on a high note?
Though. Yeah, let's talk about good stuff.
Yeah. Well, this is like a quasi – I'm going to call it a high note, even though it's not exactly what people wanted. So Games with Gold – July 2014, here's the lineup. On Xbox One, they are retaining Max and the Curse of Brotherhood for the next month, which is
come on.
Yeah, that's kind of
the hell.
That's kind of the down. I'll start with the bad news. So that's
no
the bad
shits
news.
Could be given by me for that game. Like no, literally no shits.
No shits. Can give no
not
shits.
Not even a little rabbit pellet of a
okay,
shit.
So let's move on to the good news. And the good news is that the other game that's going to be available on Xbox One is Guacamelee Super Turbo Championship Edition.
Oh, cool. That's right. Actually
which is,
pretty good news.
Which is not a new game to most people, but will be a new game to Xbox One. And so what makes this cool is that a new game is coming to Xbox One and will be free when it comes.
Yeah, that is good news.
Which is super cool because Guacamelee is one of those games that I've heard a lot about. I probably own a copy of it on Steam from like a Humble Bundle, but I'd rather play it on Xbox. So
yeah,
that's exciting. So that's cool. Going to be Xbox One for July. And then on Xbox 360, the first game is going to be Gotham City Impostors, which I think Matt really enjoyed.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. It's a Monolith game, if I remember correctly. Mm-hmm. So it's one of my favorite studios from No One Lives Forever. And then on July 16th, it's going to be Battle Block Theater from Behemoth.
Okay.
Oh, cool.
Which I've also heard many good things about, so that should be a lot of fun.
Free
so
games.
Although we're stuck with Max and the Curse of Brotherhood for another month. Such a curse, indeed. The other three games are pretty good. None of them are like full like retail style games, but maybe that will improve over time.
Yeah.
I'm really kind of waiting for the dam to break
news.
Here.
It's good news that the first run game is free, right? Like it comes out and it's free. That's good.
I think that's what's significant about this news is that a game that is being released to Xbox One is going to arrive as a free title.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's coming through the ID at Xbox program or if that's coming through a different channel, but I think that's significant. I think that says something about what they're trying to do with this in terms of, you know, not only competing with PlayStation, but I think at this point it's important to also acknowledge that you need to compete with Steam as well, mm-hmm. as Steam makes its push into the living room with in-home streaming.
Yeah,
so
sure.
Yeah, so I think that's a good thing. And then I guess maybe the only other thing to tack onto this is that for the Xbox One, their ID at Xbox program really ramped up this week, and I think they released like 6 games through this program just in this week, which include 60 Second Shooter Prime, Outlast, Zombie Driver, RBI Baseball 14, Contrast, and Another World 20th Anniversary Edition.
Really Zombie cool. Driver?
Zombie Driver Ultimate Edition. I looked at a video of this because it seems ridiculous. It looks like a top-down driving, like, as if that aspect of Dead Rising was just in a car top-down perspective, just kind of like road rage, knocking down zombies, stuff like that.
So you're not a zombie driving a car.
I don't really know. That question remains unanswered. You might have to play the game to find out.
All right.
But it's, I mean, that's cool. It's cool that games are coming to the system in some capacity. And
what's the next major release for the one?
Oh, well, it's, you know, it's Transformers Rise of the Darkspark.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll talk about that later.
Yeah, absolutely. We surely will.
Let's come back with some reviews, guys.
All right.
All right. Let's do it. Okay, so Valiant Hearts, The Great War, just came out this week for PC and Xbox One and PS4, and it's developed by Ubisoft. And it's a puzzle platformer that's set in World War One, which I think is the first kind of puzzle platformer ever set in World War One. I think
probably,
you guys can quote me on that.
That's probably a claim to fame, for sure.
Yeah, actually, it's kind of weird. I just saw on Twitter that today is actually the day that the assassin, Gavrilo Princip, assassinated Archduke Franz Ferdinand 100 years ago today,
which is one of the main
catalysts for World War One.
It's a very timely release.
It is. And so I think they did it on purpose. This year is the 100th anniversary, really, of the beginning of World War One. And the thing that's pretty amazing about this game is they worked with a lot of historians to make it very historically accurate. So as you're going through the game and completing puzzles, little like newspaper clippings will pop up and you'll be able to actually go and read about what was actually going on in the war for real. So you can actually see, you know, photos from the war and what was going on. And I think a lot of reviewers kind of saw this as a negative, which is weird. I mean, I teach history, so I love it. But
yeah.
But a lot of people were kind of like put off by the amount of information kind of being thrown at you. I do have to say the puzzles are pretty simple. You know, they're not going to, you guys know me, I'm not like a big puzzle guy. But the puzzles are simple enough. Like, for instance, like one, you're playing as a French soldier and you have to get across the battlefield while carrying a banner, and all these mortars are being fired at you. And it's really well presented. It's super dramatic. The music's amazing. The art's gorgeous. It's very like cartoony. And you're running across the battlefield, and all you have to do essentially is dodge mortar fire and not get blown up, right?
Sure.
it's actually really a pretty – it's a pretty – visceral game. Like, there's a lot of death and destruction, but it's never your character is causing it. Like, I'm not the one blowing people up or shooting people. I'm always doing things kind of in the background of the war. So I'm like cutting down barbed wire, I'm helping soldiers advance, at least so far. So I'm about two hours in. Some of the puzzles I've encountered so far have been really pretty cool. One, I'm a French prisoner of war, and I've had to the Germans are forcing me to make them sausages. So I have to go into this barn and I have to mix all these things together to make them sausages in a big cauldron. And then as soon as I push the sausages out to the German soldiers, a mortar strike happens and I have to like dig my way out of the rubble and kind of fight my way across the battlefield, which is pretty cool. Very innovative. There is a dog, which you guys have probably seen in the ads for this.
That's what's
and there's
me
one
from playing
scene
the
that
game.
I know. Well, dude, this scene would probably make you cringe because this dog survives this mortar attack with you, and he's like a German medic dog, and you're a French soldier who was a prisoner of war, and you're kind of trying to fight your way out of this, you know, prisoner of war camp, and the dog's helping you with the puzzles. So he can access areas that you can't access. He can like dig up things out of the ground. He already, in just having him around for about a half an hour, he has a lot of personality, so a very likable pet character. Well, there's a scene where you're running and you're running with the dog, and the dog charges ahead and gets caught in barbed wire. So the dog is like writhing in barbed wire and just like screeching, and I'm currently in a cabin with a house full of dogs, and they are going ballistic because they hear this, you know, recording of a dog seemingly in pain. So my dogs start barking, and then the dog on the screen is crying, and it just turned into pretty much utter chaos.
I will never play this game.
But, well, no, I mean, you know, spoiler alert, you save the dog. The dog is fine.
Sure.
But it is very hectic. You know, I do have to say that this game is really well presented. It's very simple. Like, the mechanics are very, very simple. You know, I really ever played a game like it. It's done
it
with
gorgeous.
The Ubi art frame. Yeah, it's done with that Ubi art framework that they did Child of Light with, mm-hmm. which, from what I've read, allows the artists to program the game in a much easier way. So if you're actually someone who does the art for a game, you'll be able to really help with the production of the game more than someone who does coding. So it allows the artist to have a much more active role in the production of the title. So, you know, if you are interested in learning about the war at all, it is an awesome tool to teach other people about what happened in the war. If you're into a great story with really so far interesting characters and a great adventure, then I'd definitely say pick it up. So it's a really emotional, kind of dark story. You know, it's about a really terrible time in the world. So you're mm-hmm. not going to be like jumping up and down with joy. But, you know, already in my first 2 hours of playing it, I've had a lot of really cathartic moments. It's a really moving, well-produced story. And it's about $15 now for the new platforms and also for PC. So I definitely say check out Valiant Hearts The Great War.
Cool. Awesome.
Yeah, so, Scott. Cool. I currently have the Amazon page open. I'm about to press buy now on Rise of the Darkspark. Should I do it?
Well, I hope you get it for Xbox One, because those next-gen graphics, I'm sure, will look amazing on this game. Yeah, so most of my beef with Transformers Rise of the Darkspark is that, okay, so it is a movie tie-in game. And,
yes.
and we all know that these games are historically bad, right?
Of course. But they always yeah. worked.
Yeah. Yeah, sure. See also Superman Returns.
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
And, yeah, so, like, what the problem here is with this particular series is that we also have two other games against which we can compare the two movie games that currently exist.
Yeah, right. The High Moon games were fucking great.
Yeah, and this is not a High Moon game. This is like a, what is this, Edge of Reality or Edge of Space or Edge of Something is the studio that made this game.
Yeah.
And it feels like they took the assets from the previous games and were just like, what can we do in the amount of time that we have with the mm-hmm. assets that we have from other things, you know?
Do these games sell? Why do they come out?
What? I mean, I rented it because I like Transformers, yeah. and even though, like, I knew this wasn't a Haimu game, but I was willing to play it just because I enjoy
sure.
the way that these games work, you know? And I guess the thing that kind of sucks about it is that what works about the other games is not what happens in this game. So when you play a Transformers game, you expect to, you know, transform, drive around, shoot at people.
to transform.
Yeah,
that's basic. True.
Yeah, yeah, it's a basic tenet of these games is that you know, you can transform and drive around, and then there's adds a little variety to your combat, if you know what I mean. And this game really gives you no reason to transform other than like, okay, it's time to drive down this corridor and then jump over, you know, a broken bridge, and then it's back to like third person shooting, which is kind of disappointing. So that's kind of the beef with the game is that
so you can't transform at any time.
You can, but there's no reason to. There's
okay.
no like there's no incentive to do it. The enemies that you encounter don't transform either. They
okay.
They all just kind of like show up and you know, they shoot at you just the way that any other character in a third person shooter would shoot at you.
Yeah.
And so you're really not motivated to do what makes Transformers, what sets Transformers apart from the other third-person shooters like in the genre, which is really depressing. And so anyways, the game opens up sort of in a weird time frame. I think the game begins at the end of the story, and the game is split in half into levels that take place on Earth and then levels that take place on Cybertron, I think sometime in the past, but it's hard to follow. And man, the disparity between the levels on Earth and the levels on Cybertron is like Miles, you know? I don't know if you guys have checked out any of the prior movie tie-in games that, that also take place on Earth, but like the Earth environments look so bad. It looks like, I don't know, it looks like a mobile phone, you know? Like,
what?
Like, what? It's like you're in an outdoor environment and it just like all the buildings look the same. It almost has like that next gen filter. Like everything's kind of weirdly gray, dark green. And you're just like, I don't understand. Like, why does this look this way?
Oh, wow.
And for some reason, the Earth environments feel larger than the Cybertron environments, which if you think about that from a functional perspective, you know, Transformers are much larger than human beings. So why should I feel as if I have more mobility in, on Earth than I do in Cybertron, where I feel like I'm in these cramped, like, fighting corridors all the time? Like, the whole thing, like, is mind-blowing. It just makes very little sense. And, you know, everything else about the game, like, still works. Like, they didn't really change a lot about the third-person combat. The it's still fun to try different weapons, and you have... It's the same system. You've got, like, a primary weapon, a secondary weapon. They've added this ability to add what they call hacks, which are things that make the game slightly more difficult, which give you more experience as you play through the game. Okay. Your
like skulls?
Yeah, like skulls.
Yeah.
You have one profile that carries over between the multiplayer and single-player component. So any XP that you earn in the campaign is XP that carries over into unlocks for multiplayer and so on. And I guess one of the other things, well, I'll get to multiplayer in a second, but the way that you unlock items is through almost like a Battlefield system where you progress through the game, and as you complete challenges and you gain experience and level up, you get, you know, boxes that you unlock, like briefcases almost, where it's like bronze, silver, gold, and like ultra boxes, and you open up these blind boxes and they give you weapons and weapon attachments and characters to use in multiplayer.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can add kind of like your three D-pad items, like your special like disposable items. Those are customizable too. So all that stuff in the game works, right?
Okay.
But just about everything else, like the game just falls flat in its execution. And that, I suppose, is what is the most disappointing aspect of the game. I mean, I played through the whole thing in 2 days. And
oh,
I think,
wow.
I think single player, it's less than 10 hours, that single player
campaign. Yeah.
I don't know. Like, if you've played War for Cybertron or Fall of Cybertron, you are essentially playing this game for the same reason I did, which is just like, hey, I would like a little more of that. That would be nice, you know?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, I think we're all Transformers fans, which is why we endure this weird world that we're in. We're Transformers.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I know. You'll talk about it more in the movie review, I'm sure, but like, I don't know if this is in the movie, but there's like a character who is like a samurai. Is that character?
No, he was in the movie.
Okay. Yeah, he's weird. I don't get that. He's got a samurai face, which is, I thought the Transformers were supposed to take on vehicle shapes, but he somehow has like a samurai mask.
Is he crossing over Shredder into the movie?
That
what's going on?
A little bit.
Yeah, he's weird.
And he has a very thick Asian accent.
Yeah. Oh, good. God forbid a Michael Bay come out and not be slurred.
He's like one of those characters, I guess he used to be a Decepticon and then decided to be on the side of good and try to atone for all this. And like, he's got a special attack, which is totally OP in the game. And but, you know, every level gives you a different character to work with. And it, like, just like in the old games, it flips back and forth between Autobots and Decepticons. And it's just like, I don't know, all the characters kind of feel similar to me, and because you can switch the weapons out between any of the characters, like, they all are basically the same, with the exception of the ones that can fly and the ones that don't. And then Grimlock, I will let you talk about Grimlock in the movie review, but when I saw him, I feel like my childhood cried a little bit.
Yeah, there's just a little bit of that. Yeah.
Just a little bit of that. So the last thing I'll talk about is the multiplayer. I only played it twice. It's only escalation, by the way.
Okay.
Which is like the horde mode.
Yeah, yeah.
And I played two rounds. Both rounds, somebody quit out of the match. It said like migrating host to new player, and then booted me back out to the menu. So that was my multiplayer experience.
Because no one's playing it. Yeah.
No, I mean, I started on a team with four people, and then somebody would drop out, and then the game would boot out to the menu, and you would not get any experience or anything like that. So
I think what that points out is that multiplayer is hard to do.
Yeah, solid netcode there.
And that if you don't have a dedicated team on it, maybe just don't put multiplayer in your game. That's probably the better call.
Yeah, I think people were disappointed. I mean, I read some comments online, and some people were disappointed that there wasn't the competitive multiplayer. And I would prefer escalation, and it would be fun if we were all playing together. But again, I found the environments to be boring, and I found the gameplay lacking in the sense that it doesn't really encourage you to do the thing that makes Transformers Transformers. So,
right.
Yeah. Yeah.
With that, let's talk about the movie. It's probably much better, right?
Oh, yeah. This is going to be great.
Jeez.
I kind of went and saw this just for the purpose of talking about it because I already knew how this was going to end up.
16% on Rotten Tomatoes, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so what I did is I sat down right before we started recording and made a quick list of some of the major malfunctions that I found in Transformers 4. First of all, I love shitty movies. Like, I've always loved shitty movies. I grew up watching trauma movies. I'm not a movie snob by any means, mm-hmm. like at all. But this is a fucking terrible film. It is a terrible film, and it's so terrible that I told you guys right before we started recording that there were points where I turned to my wife during the middle of the movie and just we started looking at each other and just started laughing because we couldn't believe that some of the things on the screen were actually happening and going on. It was like, honestly, it was like a crazy person, like a real crazy person made a movie with $400 million and just did whatever the fuck they wanted. So starting with my list, the first thing on my list is that the film is nearly 3 hours long. Okay. Yeah. Nearly 3 hours long for a Transformers
Why?
Movie. Yeah. Okay. The end fight scene, I think, is over 40 minutes long. It is a 40 minute long fight scene. It is exhausting. They're like literally my eyes hurt because it was just 40 minutes of shit flying around and blowing up. I didn't know where anybody was. People were being sucked into the air. There were giant magnets. People were just like flying all over the place. It was fucking insanity for the last 40 minutes. And so the whole movie is 3 hours long. And I'm going to blend everything else into why that ended up happening in the first place. The other thing I said is that's the equivalent of watching 15 episodes of the cartoon series in one sitting.
Oh my God. By comparison, Avatar was only 2 hours and 41 minutes long.
Yeah. So this is a bloated monstrosity. Okay. So, the other thing, number two on my list, is that there are four different main villains in this film.
Oh my
four
God.
Different main villains, each one with different motivations. So you have like this paid mercenary who's mad about what they call the Battle of Chicago, which is what ended the third film because his sister, who is obviously a human, died during the Battle of Chicago. So he hates all Transformers and he just wants to kill them. Then you have Kelsey Grammer.
what?
So Kelsey Grammer, Frasier, shows up on the show randomly, and he just wants to capture Transformers and sell them because he wants to be a rich CIA agent.
Okay.
That's his motivation. Stanley Tucci shows up as Stanley Tucci. Well, not really, but he's essentially Stanley Tucci. In every movie, but especially in this movie, and he plays essentially like a Bill Gates character, and he is trying to manufacture his own Transformers, so he's trying to build them. And then actually wait, that makes
wait,
five.
He's trying to build sentient alien robot?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
And then you have Galvatron, who is Megatron, kind of. This is a little bit of a spoiler, but Megatron reincarnated. Galvatron comes back.
Okay.
And then you have there's this sort
lockdown?
Of lockdown. Yes, thank you. He's in the game, right?
Oh yeah,
lockdown, sort of like a predator, sort of bounty hunter who's bounty hunting the Transformers and hunting them down and working with the bad humans. And so all of those bad guys are all doing different things essentially at the same time, and it just leads to like a gigantic clusterfuck of a plot. You're just like, why is this guy doing this? Why is that guy doing that?
Was there time travel in this movie?
There was no time travel, but there should have been.
There was time travel in the game. Basically, Lockdown's motivation in the game was to, like, he's a mercenary. He wants to have more business. So his plan was to somehow manipulate time to bring Cybertron's war to Earth to drum up like more business for himself, I guess.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
He's working with Kelsey Grammer to capture the last of the Autobots and the last of the Decepticons who are kind of in hiding. Mm. I do have to say one good thing is that there are only 5 Autobots in this film.
Okay.
So you get to know them a little bit more than in the past films. In the past films, like, they had very little personality. In this, you know, they do get a little bit of screen time each, and you kind of get to know them.
3 hours long. They better get
So you actually, seriously, you, like, learn everything about them. The next thing on the list is that random characters who are supposed to be important. This is, seems to be a staple of Michael Bay, but what he did in this was really bizarre. Like, all of a sudden, the movie opens with this blonde woman who has, like, all this dialogue, and then she disappears for, like, a quarter of the movie. So she's gone for, like, an hour. And you're like, who is that blonde woman? What was she doing? And she pops up again, and she says some more dialogue, and, like, and then she disappears for, like, another hour. And you're like, hey, whatever happened to the blonde woman? Then she pops up again, like, randomly in an action sequence, and then seemingly disappears again for the rest of the movie. And you're like,
what?
Who the fuck was she, and why was she important? What was she doing? They do this a lot. And there's also an Asian, like, businesswoman who appears with Stanley Tucci, who you are supposed to, I guess, know who she is and what her motivation is. But she does the same thing. They show her in, like, the scene talking about Transformers and magic metal and all this shit. Then she disappears for a couple hours, pops up again. She has, like, a weird kung fu scene in an elevator. And, like, then she disappears again for the rest of the movie. And you're like, who, what, why are these people even in this? Like, what is going on? Like, it's wow. So weird. It's just really, really weird. It's like, honestly, like, my wife is making faces at me.
Sounds completely nonsensical, this
whole
movie.
It is totally, totally nonsensical. It's almost like Michael Bay was just, like, friends with these people. He's like, hey, you want to be in Transformers? Like, I'll just give you a couple really cool scenes, and then you'll disappear. No one will notice. Not the last thing, but one of the other things on the list is that the Dinobots are actually only in, like, the last 20 minutes of the movie.
Of course.
Perfect. Yeah, they're only in the last 20 minutes of the movie, and they have the main
sales point of the movie.
Yes, so they're on the posters. They show Optimus riding on Grimlock. They're only in the last 20 minutes. They have no personality at all. They have no dialogue. They're basically just, like, big, you know, like, bruisers that Optimus Prime recruits seemingly out of the blue. And so he kind of bullies them into working with him and then sets them free. But yeah, it's kind of disappointing because as a kid, you know, I grew up loving the Dinobots, and, like, Grimlock and the rest of them had the coolest. They were kind of like the Three Stooges of the, you know, Transformers world.
How?
They were goofy, but they were tough.
Yeah.
In this, they were just honestly, like, they were nothing, you know, which is kind of a bummer.
How many more of these movies is he allowed to make? Is he, like, on a contract to make them? Like, what is the deal?
I don't think so. No, I think renewing.
As quickly as they could reboot Spider-Man, you know, I feel like it's time to just reboot this too.
Dude, do you know how much money these movies make?
That's insane.
And,
like, I honestly, as soon as I walked into the theater with my wife, one of the first things I said is, like, well, I'm like, we're definitely part of the problem. Like, I paid to go see this movie. I'll probably pay to go see the next one. Everybody leaves them being like, what the fuck was that? But at the same time, everybody goes and sees them because the IP is so strong. For the same reason Scott rented the game. It's like, you know, the generation that we are, we grew up loving Transformers. And so we're willing to, you know, overlook all the horrible shit.
This is, like, all we have.
Yeah, it's, like, all we have. But I agree, it should be rebooted.
Oh, hey, Scott.
Huh.
Transformers 4 was the first in a new Transformers trilogy that Michael Bay will be continuing to make.
Oh,
fantastic.
5 and 6
have already been guaranteed.
Oh, good. Okay, great.
Here we go. So the good thing is there's less racism this time. There aren't any well, unless you consider the samurai Transformer to be racist. But it's actually voiced by Ken Watanabe, who's actually a really good Asian actor. So I don't think they were just trying to be racist with how he talked. I think that's actually his accent. One of the things also on my list is the terrible relationship between Mark Wahlberg and his daughter's boyfriend, who I don't think had a real name, but his name was called, he was called Lucky Charms. And so
what is he, a stripper?
So randomly, this is 40 minutes into the film, there's this big explosive sequence and all this shit's going down, and a guy shows up in like a rally car and you've never seen him before. And they're like, he's like, get in my car. And Mark Wahlberg's, hey, who are you? And he's like, I'm your daughter's boyfriend. And the daughter's like, sorry, Dad, I didn't tell you. And so this guy randomly shows up in the film, and he has no purpose in the film whatsoever other than to drive around. He has barely any dialogue. He doesn't really say anything, but all he really says is like shitty stuff toward Mark Wahlberg. So Mark Wahlberg will be like, you know, thanks for saving my daughter. And he'll be like, I didn't save your daughter. I saved. No, that's Australian. I can't do Irish, but he said, I didn't save your daughter. I saved my girlfriend. And you're just like, oh, it's so groan worthy.
Wow. So gross.
And, you know, Mark Wahlberg was actually pretty good. I liked him better than Shia LaBeouf, but watching those two characters banter back and forth was absolutely agonizing.
So I guess if you just like loud noises and cars, this is the reason to go see this movie, yeah. I suppose.
And definitely last on my list was the sixth thing. I just wrote, what is happening? And I kind of talked about it in the beginning. Like the entire end of the movie, the last 45 minutes, is just one gigantic explosive action sequence. And there's a scene where there's this giant spaceship flying over the city, and it has a magnet stuck to the bottom of it. You never are told really why, or if you were told, it happened so fast I didn't hear it, that they're sucking up all the metal in the city into this giant magnet. So trains are flying up, and cars, and transformers, and everything's getting sucked into the magnet. And then just all of a sudden everything starts dropping from the magnet. And it only happened in the movie just because it looked super cool. Like, there was no reason for them to be magneting everything other than to have everything fly around. And it was for like 20 minutes, right? And there are entire sequences that are 5 minutes of like constant shaky cam. And normally I'm very forgiving of shaky cam, but I was like, what the fuck? Like, I honestly felt like someone punched me in the head by the time the action sequence was over. I was like, oh my God, like this is just, it was fucking crazy.
Is it possible for a movie to give you a concussion?
I think so. I left feeling very concussed. But anyway, so that was Transformers 4. If you're in for, if you want 3 hours of nonstop, nonsensical, random robot action, then go for it.
So, Scott.
Yes.
The total budget of all four movies, so including the new one, is $755 million.
Yeah.
The total gross of just the first three, not including the new one, is $2.7 billion.
Oh, my God.
So that is why these movies will get made for literally ever. They just mint money for the studio. Oh, it's like
so disgusting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so gross.
So really even off their worldwide gross from the first three movies, they could make the next trilogy and still break even easily.
It's so terrible. Why? Yeah.
There's also one thing I just thought of that I have to mention.
Okay.
So the whole movie, Optimus is basically like on the run. You know, he's trying to get away from people. All those bad guys are hunting him. And then he kind of goes on the offensive near the end. Well, you know, he's on the run and he's a truck the whole time running away. And there's all these sequences. The last 30 seconds of the movie, he flies away with jetpack boots on and flies into orbit. And you're just like, you dumb motherfucker. Why didn't you just fly away in the very beginning? Seriously. Like, you can fly into space at any time and you save it for the last 30 seconds just to have this dramatic exit. It was so...
Groan.
God. Amazing.
So let's talk about a different kind of movie.
Yes, a different kind of movie.
I texted you guys yesterday and said, hey, there's a movie coming out and it's available on demand at the same time that it's in theaters called They Came Together. It's directed by David Wayne and written by David Wayne and Michael Showalter, who both were in The State together and Stella. And also, the last time these two worked in this capacity, they made a movie called Wet Hot American Summer, which is...
One of the best ever.
Yeah, it's a cult classic comedy at this point. It's a hilarious movie. Everyone should see it if you've never seen that. So I was interested to see this. This is a sort of send up of a rom-com. This is basically them just goofing on a rom-com for an hour and a half. Starring Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler. guest starring a list that is so long that I don't know that I can name. Oh, yeah. It's basically every comedian friend that they have. Jason Mantzoukas is one of the main actors. I'm going to forget everybody. There's a bunch of SNL. Yeah, a bunch of State, bunch of SNL, people from 30 Rock. Like, it's all over the map. Adam Scott shows up in the movie briefly. Like, it's just everyone that they know shows up in this movie. And it is a sort of goofy, sarcastic take on rom-coms.
I knew you were going to like this movie as soon as I realized it was like a retelling of You've Got Mail.
You've Got Mail. It's not exactly. They definitely
it's
the
really
first,
close.
The first like 45 minutes is the first 45 minutes of You've Got Mail, but them just making fun of it. Like literally just reaming it like the whole time. And then the last 45 minutes spreads into more different rom-coms, but it's definitely mostly You've Got Mail, like pretty much the entire time. And they make fun of Nora F. I mean, it's just making fun of, like, I would like to say lovingly making fun of these movies, but they are just kind of ragging on them the whole time.
It made me realize like how much of a formula there is like to the romantic comedy. It's like, it's, I mean, I always knew there was a formula, but watching like a satirical take on it is really fucking hilarious, because you're like, wow, like they are all like this.
The city really is one of the characters. It is one of the characters. The city is. You just can't do this without being in New York. And like the way they make fun of them are just, it's amazing. Yeah. I don't know how much to review. So, okay. I wanted to say basically that the thing that I think maybe lacked in this movie, but I wonder if it really did, or if it just takes time or multiple viewings for it to sink in the same comedic way that Wet Hot American Summer did, is that there's no real plot, if you will, to the entire story. Like, there is a plot, but the plot is essentially that Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler are telling, is it Will Arnett? Is that who it is?
I don't think it's Will Arnett.
No. It's Bill Hader.
Yeah, it's Bill Hader.
Bill Hader and I'm going to blank on her name. The newer receptionist from The Office, Ellie Kemper.
Yes. Yeah.
The two of them are like, they're sitting at a dinner table, and it's Paul Rudd and Amy Poehler telling them the story of how they got together. And it's this ridiculously long story that like they break up in multiple times and get married. And like, it's just, you know, it's like, it is a send up of a rom-com. Mm-hmm. So that's the plot. But the actual story part of it is really just a scene of like them making fun of rom-coms, like stitched together. Like there's not like an actual plot in the middle of the plot, if you will.
Ah.
So it is a little weird when you're watching it. Like, you have to kind of go with the fact that you're not watching a linear story. And I can't remember if Wet Hot... It made me question if Wet Hot really had one either, essentially.
Yeah.
And I know Wet Hot did, to an effect, but I'm wondering if I filled in all those blanks with, like, jokes and things that I remember from the movie, and not so much... Like, if I rewatched it, if I wouldn't just be like, oh, this is just a ridiculous... you know, send up of 80s movies. I did really enjoy it. There are moments in it that I laughed harder than I've laughed in a long time at movies. And then there were some that definitely fell a little flat and that just were kind of like, eh, okay. But overall, I did enjoy it. And being able, I love the fact that some of these smaller movies are doing on demand day of release.
It's a great idea. I mean, actually, it was Christina that mentioned it to me right before you did, because she might have been talking with Melissa, but she's like, hey, this just came out. We should rent it. And I was like, cool. And it was like $7 on Xbox. Yeah. And, you know, it's a good alternative for a night out in the movies. It's definitely a lot cheaper, especially for new first run things. Sure. And it streams perfectly well. You know, you don't have to download anything or anything.
So what did you think?
I enjoyed it, mainly because I think I enjoy the cast so much. And, you know, I didn't really think like you said, there's no plot, so there's not really much to really talk about in that regard. So it's not like I can say the story was great, but I think, you know, it was well acted. It was really funny. Like you said, there were a couple standout gags in there that were just fucking hilarious. The scene where, God, I love him. What's his name? Where he has a superhero suit on, he has to shit.
From SVU.
What's his name? God, he was in Wet Hot too with the.
Yes.
Oh, anyway, I'll remember his name in a minute. But there's a couple, you know,
Maloney. Melissa,
yes, Christopher. Thank you, Christopher Maloney was hilarious.
Oh my god, that should. I mean, did we already ruin the joke? Yeah, I guess we already ruined the joke, but that Halloween scene is unbelievable.
That was really, really funny because I think we've all been there where we've almost shit ourselves. So it's always good to, you know, kind of experience the agony of others. But the other scene that really got me was the scene in the bar where Paul Rudd kept repeating himself, and it went on for like about a minute straight. And it to our listeners, it sounds really stupid, but there's a line of dialogue that's literally repeated over and over again.
Yeah, tell me about it.
And then for about 60 seconds, right?
Yeah, the guy repeats it, and then he's like, you can say that again. And then the guy repeats it. He's like, tell me about it. And then the guy repeats it, and it just keeps going.
Perfect. And it sounds obnoxious, but like it gets to the point where like you're just like, I can't believe this is actually happening on film.
Yeah.
And so I just started laughing hysterically because it was so ridiculous. You know, parts of it definitely do fall flat. I almost think that they started shooting it and they didn't film enough stuff or something like that. And then they went and kind of bookended it with the dinner scene where she's telling or they're telling the life story. Because I almost feel like it might have been recorded as like a standalone film, and they went in and kind of filmed some other stuff to bulk it up a bit.
I think that was the original intention, but I can see what you're saying. Yeah, it definitely feels like, I know that they were shooting it in the same style that they shot Wet Hot, which was basically they just put all the actors in a room and kind of were like, they had a script, you know, but kind of like got everybody together. Everybody was hanging out all the time together, so it kind of became this organic joke of them all being together and doing this movie. So.
Yeah. But it's definitely, I mean, They Came Together is a lot of fun, you know, if you're into comedy. And it has a really incredible cast. So if you like, you know, modern comedy at all, you're going to find some people that you like in there.
I really do have a feeling that this is going to be one of those movies that continues to sort of have a life of its own. Just due to the cast. I think as people kind of discover it or see that, you know, oh, Adam Scott's in this other movie or David Wayne did another movie, I think they'll kind of catch on over time. But it really is like there are moments in it that just like when he meets her parents for the first time, that whole scene. Do you remember that where they end up being white supremacists? It's like it's just like the way it's written and stuff is just very David Wayne and very Michael Showalter and really funny. So if you enjoy anything that they have done in the past, I highly recommend this movie. It is very funny and such an easy like $7 for, you know, a great movie in the afternoon or evening is worth it to me. So
better than $30 for Transformers.
Oh my God, please. If this movie made $2.7 billion, that would be amazing.
That would be amazing.
All right.
You guys want to come back with our question of the week?
Indeed.
Sure.
Let's do it. All right, we are back with our Nerd Appropriate Question of the Week, and this one was kind of based on the World Cup mania that was going on, or is currently still going on right now. It is currently going on. Not over yet. This was with World Cup mania sweeping the globe. Do you think esports will ever be as big and as popular? So I kind of wanted this is something I've always been curious about, just wondering what people think about esports, because to me, it seems it still seems very small to me, but I know it's growing kind of exponentially at this point. Like every year, the prizes get bigger, especially with MOBAs. And you know, it's interesting. I'm curious. Like, are esports ever going to be huge? Will we see, you know, them being played at the Olympics and things like that? So we got some great responses from you guys. So thank you.
So Justin,
go ahead.
Oh, you want to go together? One, two,
let's
three.
Do it together.
Justin at Midtown 583 says the most recent issue of Game Informer would say that they are mostly with MOBAs like League of Legends. Yeah. The big 2,000-pound gorilla in the room that is League of Legends.
What's going to happen when people start hating that game?
I thought people already did.
Like in mass. Like, oh. You know, like when the public's public opinion turns on that game and it's not the game anymore.
Well, you know, apparently toxic players are great for MOBA communities.
Oh boy.
From what I read this week. So
couldn't believe that.
Pulling up the collar.
So Justin at Gigawatt Conduit says, with League now being considered a varsity college sport, I think it's only a matter of time. Imagine it in the Olympics.
Yeah, did you guys see that news that I want to say it was a college in, I want to say maybe Arizona, was actually giving scholarships for League of Legends players?
Yep.
Kind of crazy.
I feel like there's money to be made. Yeah. I feel like I'm not... wait a minute. So, I mean, if they are given scholarships to play League of Legends, does that mean they're not allowed to profit off of their...
The NCAA would regulate it at that point and say that they are not allowed to make any money off that game.
But the NCAA doesn't regulate League of Legends, does it? Or does it fall under that umbrella somehow? I feel like there's some questions. I think that
if colleges are giving out public money for if it's a private college, totally different discussion.
Sure.
If a public college is giving out public money for scholarships for people to play League of Legends, they're either doing some real trickery with their wording on how and why this person's getting a scholarship, or the NCAA is regulating that player. It's not regulating League of Legends, but if that player were to then profit off of the game, he would be removed from the college and the sport.
Yeah, I mean, I don't – and then wouldn't like things like Title IX, wouldn't that apply?
Oh, yeah. Yep.
As well, I mean, I don't – I've never seen a league played in an e-sport, but I would imagine that the ratio is not – 1-to-1?
Yeah.
Is that a safe bet?
I don't know. It's a big community, but I would agree probably.
Okay.
I'm going to say I don't know if there are any pro female players. I haven't seen any.
I mean, I feel like I don't know enough about this topic to talk about it, you know, smartly, but
yeah.
I don't know because, you know, right now, like, I think there are far more people in the world that watch sports on TV than play video games. So
yeah.
I think that in order to get esports to the level of regular sports, you would need to somehow educate people about the rules of the game that is being played, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Sure.
So I think that would have a lot to do with it. I think also finding a specific game for people to sort of latch onto and get invested in would help a lot with that.
Sure. No, I agree.
You know,
it has to be something that like people of all generations can identify with as well. Like right now, like when my parents see a video game on the screen, their brain instantly turns off. They're like, oh, and they like run away. Like,
yeah.
They can't. They just can't, you know, they can't handle it.
And plus, at least with like American football, something that is really popular to do from a broadcast perspective is to create a narrative for a game, you know?
Well, that is happening, I think, because there are commentators and stuff, right? So these esports get commentated and have sort of a story told about these people playing. And, you know, I think that is I think they are, I think part of the success of esports, whether esport fanatics want to admit this or not, is that they are following the model of the NFL, essentially, in a lot of ways, of like, you know, put commentators on it, make it a story, make the people that are playing like heroes in this kind of thing, and, you know, warriors and combatants and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what people are, I think, what sells esports to a community, is that they're following a known model. The NFL makes billions of freaking dollars in this country and will continue to do so. And I think esports is smart enough to say, oh, well, there's the working model we need.
Yeah, it's a good model, but it's like, again, you know, like educating people about the rules, I think, will be important. If that's going to be the goal of that, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So Jushin says no chance because nothing will beat the human spirit found in sports. So he says no to esports.
You got the touch.
I understand what he's saying. I think that what we hear from the next couple of people is probably more to it than the spirit. I think people can have spirit behind esports. And I, by the way, am not involved in esports in any way.
Yeah, no.
I'm not like a supporter or anything, but we have friends that do it and really love it and talk about it. When I hear them talk about it, they talk about it in the same way that I hear people talk about, you know, baseball or football. So, but next up, Michael Coles, at Michael Coles says, not unless every poor kid around the world gets a computer instead of something round to kick with friends, which is, I think, the real kicker here. The World Cup is humongous because everybody can play soccer anywhere.
Yep.
Yeah.
At any place. It doesn't matter. And there is not internet. The reason esports is huge in America and in England, I mean, and Asia, right?
Yes.
Is that we're talking about two places that have a lot of computers and a lot of network connectivity to play said games on.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's what this is. I think that the esports, to me, benefits, right? Like the reason they can talk about it, like, oh, this is like of the level of any other sport or anything. I almost said real sport, which would have been offensive, I understand. But,
yeah,
you know, like, I think the reason that this discussion can be had is because that the community, while large, is still relatively small compared to what these other sports that we're talking about.
Yes.
So it's like okay to be like, oh yeah, you know, we're the scrappy young guys doing this and this and this, when you're not on the scale or the level of a place that's like consuming hundreds of millions of viewers, you know, all the time, essentially. So I don't know, it's a weird thing to me to talk about that. Like, I don't think it's proven itself yet, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, yes, I agree, every kid would need a computer for it to be even close to the level of soccer, and that will probably never happen. And then on top of that, I think, like Scott said, there's no, you know, my dad is never going to watch a League of Legends competition. It's not going to happen anytime soon.
I mean, let's
soon.
Take something simpler. What about just like, what if the game were Street Fighter and it was just one-on-one?
He just wouldn't, it could be Tetris. He wouldn't give a crap. Like, yeah, none of that makes us any, it's just not a thing to him. It's like, this is, it's not, you know, and even me, like, I am of the gaming generation and I don't really get super into it. I'm like, okay, it's interesting. I understand it takes skill. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with it. It's not like some, like, I'm like, what a piece of junk. It's just not like.
Well, I think like Matt said, you need to get to know the players and you need to get to, you know their motivation for wanting to win. And that's what the NFL has done so well. It's created these little mini stories for us to follow. And I think, you know, if they did that, and I think they are in the process of doing that, but if they did it really well, that's what could hook me. Because right now I don't watch esports at all. But if I saw like a great documentary that like told me the story of like these five kids that like rose up from being at the bottom of the ranks to being at the top, right, and kind of taught me a little bit about the games that they were playing, I think that could really rope me in. And if I could get roped in at this point in my life, then I think most people probably could. So
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Sure.
Kate Dollarhide at Kate D says, all football requires is something round and a couple of people. Esports needs a solid computer, fast internet, and 10 people. The barrier of entry money is too high for most of the world, maybe in a far future techno utopia.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a really good point. Yeah,
I mean, even watching World Cup soccer just this week, I'm like, yeah, I want to go like to a field and just like,
yeah,
kick a ball at a goal for a couple hours.
It's a very low barrier to entry.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So you got a mailbag.
Yes, so we got a mailbag from Robert Framering. He says, sucks to say, I don't think so. To me, over time, I'm not into a game like I was years ago. If I catch it on, I'll watch it, but I don't set aside time to watch a tournament. So he's just basically saying, no, it's not appealing enough
also,
yet.
Also, aren't the nature of esports kind of ephemeral? Like these games don't last forever. They go away as technology advances. So, like, you know, I mean, soccer is soccer. It's been soccer since the beginning of soccer. Basketball basically hasn't, like, with the exception of minor rule tweaks, it's not like the game itself literally changes out. It's the same game for decades or longer. Whereas, like, you know, what was once, what, StarCraft is, well, StarCraft's still around in a competitive way. Now it's League of Legends is the big,
yeah,
you know, the big competitive game. And like, I'm sure in 5 years, it'll probably be another one that's a big competitive game in some way. Like, I feel like it switches out. Like Scott was saying, you'd have to have that one game that rallies everyone. And I just don't know what it would be. It just seems like as technology advances, it would change.
That game has to be Pokemon Puzzle League, I think.
Oh, shit. There you go.
All right, I think we're done, guys.
Yeah, that was a good, great discussion. Good,
good stuff.
We'll put that together. Nicely done.
All right, so thanks for listening to episode 159. That's insane. Of the Rated NA podcast. How long are we going to do this for? Forever?
I don't know.
Forever. Until it becomes an e-sport.
The e-sport of podcasting.
Competitive podcasting.
Oh, I love it.
We have a bigger number than you guys. We win. You guys can find us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate. You can email us directly, and that is Matt, Ash, Scott, and Hillary with one L at NerdAppropriate.com. Please send us emails. We love them. We have a Facebook account, and that is /NerdAppropriate on Facebook. And we will be back next week with episode 160. And I'll be broadcasting from somewhere on the West Coast of the United States. So there are no way. So
safe travels.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Later, guys.
Bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.
it's a transformer. Oh my
God. I think we found a transformer.
It's a transformer. Hey, you transform, don't you?
You got the touch.
That would have made the movie. I'm telling you. It's like paying $30 to get abused. It really is.
Oh, man.